Welcome to Hope for the Caregiver. I am Peter Rosenberger. This is the nation's number one show for you as a family caregiver. How are you feeling? How are you doing? How are you holding up? What's going on with you? More than 65 million are serving as a caregiver in this country of ours. How do you help these people? What does that even look like? What does it look like to speak to them in their distress? I think it was, who was the poet? John will correct me on this when he comes on, when he makes an appearance. It said, we all live lives of quiet desperation. That was Thoreau. Thoreau said that. We all live lives of quiet desperation. And caregivers are living that kind of life. And this show is built and designed to speak to caregivers so that they can better navigate a path to safety, a place where they can stand and just catch their breath, take a knee if they have to, and start developing healthier strategies for their life. And so this is why we do the show, and we want you to be a part of it. 877-655-6755. If you're watching my social media when we record this, we stream it live when we record it. We'd love to have you with us. 877-655-6755. Speaking of recording live, you know him, you love him. He's the Baron of the Board, the Sultan of Sound, the Earl of Engineering, the man. Oh, forget it. He's just John Butler, everyone.
Well, right away, I bought me a through train ticket right across Mississippi clean. I was on that midnight flyer.
Here you go.
Smoking in the New Orleans.
Come smoking in the New Orleans.
You know, I really entertained myself throughout the week coming up with stuff for you to intro you into this show.
Well, I don't know what that says, but it says something about
it. It says that I have no life.
It says quiet desperation.
It said quiet desperation. Yes, it is.
That was Thoreau, by the way. That was from Civil Disobedience, which is a
sorry.
That's a good one.
Yeah. That was very funny, John. All right, how you feeling?
I'm feeling great, man. It's a beautiful day here in Tennessee, but how are things with you? What's up?
You know, I'm doing okay. It's a beautiful day here in Montana. We got some clouds, but the weather's been very nice this week. It got up to like 50. Which in March for us is a big deal because when you get that direct sunlight, I mean, all the snow, it turns everything into mud. We have little rivers running everywhere because melting. And and so that's to be expected. But we got more snow coming in on March. We're not done with winter out here.
Oh, of course not. No.
I was talking to some rancher friends of mine out here, and they said they went 26 months one time straight with snow every month.
Ooh.
26 months.
Okay.
With snow. Now, it didn't always stay. I mean, of course. We had 5 inches of snow, for example, on Labor Day last year. but two or three days later, it's gone. Yeah. And, but it was real pretty on Labor Day. And, so, you know, it's a beautiful day. And, I get out and, feed the horses after the show today and, you know, just hanging out. Gracie is moving a little bit slow. She's not having the best day, but she's hanging tough. And just kind of living a life of quietness out here. Not necessarily desperation, but quietness. Yeah. And I do like the quiet. Well, before we get into it, because I want to talk about something a little bit serious. So before we get into that, I'll let you transition us with a joke, John.
Well,
if you
I don't
have
want to
such
brag.
A joke.
Yeah. I don't want to brag, but
go ahead.
But I will, because cashiers are always checking me out.
Are those cashiers at Walmart?
Yes. It's like, what? I'm a what's the joke? I'm a five in Target, but I'm an eight in Walmart, you know.
Was it I like going into Walmart because there I don't feel like such a heavyweight over there because it's I stand up and look, hey y'all, this is what a 38 looks like. Woohoo!
You know, there you go.
All right, enough of this frivolity. All right, John, I was having a conversation with a couple yesterday, actually.
Prove it. All right.
I got the recording. Somebody's got it at the NSA. And the topic came up that they have a family member that is going to be released from prison.
Okay.
And they have, at this point in time, agreed to let this family member come and live with them. Now, let me give you the setup.
Sure.
And then we're going to dive into this, and we're going to kind of lay these things out because I think this is an issue that's going to resonate with a lot of folks listening to the show. And And you might want to share this with someone, too, that you know of. This guy's in prison because of drugs. And he went to prison at least twice because of drugs. But the family members feel like that he has made some significant changes. Now, he's not going to get out for a while. About another year. But they feel confident, a reasonable amount of confidence he's made some changes. But they're willing to
confident
let him
enough
come.
To offer him a place. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, a place to live. And so they asked me some thoughts about it. And this man, the reason I got involved with them, because they are he's had a pretty significant operation. His wife is taking care of him. And this young man has asked if he could come and help be a part of the caregiving experience for the family.
Okay, I got lost there.
Okay, I'm sorry. The young man that's in prison is going to go stay and help be a part of the caregiver solution for who's had a surgery. And his wife is taking care of him. And so the family's kind of pulling around. But this young man wants to basically make amends and pay back. And be a part of that, which is incredibly important.
Now, he is a family member. Is that correct?
He is indeed. Blood kin.
Okay.
So it's not just a friend of the family.
Right. Or they're not doing a, cause I've had experience with people who, you know, mentored individuals that were, you know, through their church or there was a program like that.
Right.
So, yeah,
this
just,
is,
yeah, the, yeah.
There's they a familial tie, yeah. tie with
okay.
this.
Okay.
So, all right. So, but then they asked me, they said, what are your thoughts on this? You know, so,
like,
the first thing I thought of was, okay, I commend the idea.
Oh, absolutely.
Cause I do. Yeah, I think it shows great, some great healing and some great optimism and hope. But I also subscribe to what Reagan said many years ago, trust but verify.
There you go. Yeah.
And I think that is such a great setup. A great premise to go by when dealing with this. And I also offered the following pieces of advice and then I want to run this by you and see if what input you would have in it. I said, number one is make a list of all your expectations way in advance.
Right.
And whatever those expectations look like, whether it's, you know, rent, housework, groceries, maintenance,
contribution,
Whether. And I said, have all those things laid down with in writing in advance, and his feelings don't get a vote on your boundaries.
Correct.
And I said, if it offends him, there's the door.
It may not be a deal breaker, but it's certainly a big caution flag.
Because
it's okay for people to initially chafe at something and then go, okay, I've thought about it, and
And if he's serious about making amends for the damage that he's caused, which has not been insignificant from what I understand, then this is a great place to start. And he's certainly going to be under much more restraint now in prison than he would be in their home.
Right.
And so I said, these kinds of things where he's not just going to sit around and play video games all day long, that kind of stuff.
Right.
And then the other thing is about having friends come over to the home. And I would strongly recommend that he not be allowed to bring any friends to the home for at least 6 months, maybe more.
Yeah, I would, you'd like to be able to keep an eye on what's going on, but that can go south very, very quickly. The proximity to these, I'm assuming older individuals that are taking care of him. If he ends up hooking up with the old crowd or whatever, it might be better to not have that as close to the home as that, that seems reasonable.
And you don't know, he may be making a sincere effort, but his friends may not be. And so things such as prescription drugs, silverware, cash, valuables, that kind of stuff, anything that can be sold, needs to be properly secured and have that conversation up front so that he knows this is what we are expecting and this is what we're looking at. Addiction And the other thing I said is that part of the deal breaker is that he has to be in a recovery program.
And I'm sure he's in one right now in prison. But well,
I would think so.
Yeah.
I mean, he's certainly sober in prison because he's not getting drugs. But well, we don't know that.
He's dry. Well, that's true.
There's that presumption of dryness. But it's working a recovery program is going to be something that'll. I mean, if you've been to prison twice for drug related crimes, you've got a problem. You got a real problem, and there are three possible solutions when you're dealing with addiction. You're going to sober up, you're going to get locked up, or you're going to get covered up. Those are the only three paths you can take.
Yeah, it just depends on how long, you know. That's a
The reason I'm bringing this up on this show is addiction is a chronic impairment. It is. And wherever there's a chronic impairment, there's a caregiver. So this could be very well. I mean, this is going to be a lifelong issue for him to work a recovery program to go into it. And that doesn't have to mean he's in rehab every day. It just means that you're checking in with your AA or whatever 12-step program you're working or whatever. I know guys that have been sober 38 years and they're still going to AA,
right.
You know, and that is a tremendous sign of healthiness that they're taking this seriously, that they're working it and they're doing this and they're having that support system that they're building and getting reinforced. Because, what is it? The old saying, the alcoholics are, one thought away from a drink and one drink away from a drunk. And those who are in relationship with alcoholics are one thought away from, losing their minds, you know. And AA prevents helps prevent a lot of suicides, and Al-Anon helps prevent a lot of homicides.
There you go. Yeah. Well, and so, this was, you brought up something that I was going to get to later, but for the two older individuals who are taking this young man in, it would benefit them to probably learn some of that language as well.
Well, and I recommended that they go to Al-Anon immediately, you know, because, and particularly if he's not coming out for a year, they got time to go ahead and get themselves entrenched with a support group of people who understand what's going on with this addict or this alcoholic, and enabling is a, you know, they say that addiction is the only disease that convinces you that you don't have it.
Yeah.
But enabling is really giving addiction a run for its money and convincing people that they don't have it.
Yeah, let's be clear about that too.
And we caregivers can be enablers.
Caregivers are, you know.
Yeah.
If there is an enabler present, yeah.
And it doesn't necessarily have to be with illicit drugs or illicit behavior on this. Sometimes it can be just because there are a lot of different factors that go on with this. And I've dealt with too many caregivers and too many people dealing with it when you're dealing with pain medication or whether you're dealing with somebody who is going through emotional issues or whatever. You feel bad for it. And so you will stuff your own identity and try to make it easier for that person. The scenarios are endless, but if you're listening to this show now, you understand the concept of what I'm talking about. And so I wanted to broach this, and we'll talk about it some more after the break, because I think this is an issue affecting so many family members. The COVID crisis has caused a huge uptick in addiction issues and alcoholism and so forth. And there are relationships that we're having that are being sacrificed on the altar of this. And it's important that we have tools. We'll be right back. This is Peter Rosenberger, Hope for the Caregiver, hopeforthecaregiver.com. Don't go away. We got more to go. In my 3.5 decades as a caregiver, I have spent my share of nights in a hospital, sleeping in waiting rooms on fold-out cots, chairs, even the floor, sometimes on sofas and a few times in the doghouse. But let's don't talk about that. As caregivers, we have to sleep at uncomfortable places, but we don't have to be miserable. we use pillows from MyPillow.com. These things are great. They have a patented interlocking feel that adjusts to your individual sleep needs. And for caregivers trying to sleep in all the different places we have to sleep, believe me, our needs get ramped up significantly. Think about how clean your pillows are. In the COVID world, we're all fanatical about clean. Can you wash your pillows? With my pillows from MyPillow.com, we throw them in the washer and dryer. We do it all the time. 10-year warranty, guaranteed not to go flat, 60-day money-back guarantee, made in the USA. As a caregiver, you need rest. So start by going to MyPillow.com, type in the promo code CAREGIVER. You get 50% off the 4-pack, which includes 2 premium pillows and 2 go-anywhere pillows. You'll also receive a discount on anything else on the website when using your promo code CAREGIVER. That's MyPillow.com, promo code CAREGIVER. Welcome back to Hope for the Caregiver. This is Peter Rosenberger. This is the show for you as a family caregiver to stay strong and healthy, to help you stay strong and healthy as you take care of someone who is not. That's Gracie from her CD, Resilient. Go out to hopeforthecaregiver.com, see more about her music and how you can get a copy of that today. We're talking about addiction issues, boundaries, and all the things that are involved in protecting yourself as somebody who is in a relationship with somebody who has an addiction issue, whether it's alcoholism or drug. Here's an axiom that I stand by because it has proven the test of times. Addicts and alcoholics lie. They lie. I mean, they lie. And it is
to themselves and others.
Yeah, to themselves and others. And so it's important. And for this couple that's going to have this young man come into their home and stay with them, it's important that they understand these things. You don't have to be bitter or resentful or mean about it. You just have to accept the fact that this is the deal. We go to all kinds of lengths to protect ourselves against the coronavirus. But there are other kinds of viruses out there, if you will, if you could allow me to extend the metaphor, other kind of behaviors that other people have that can cause great damage to us. And this is one of those issues, and that's why boundaries are so important. John, I know boundary. You and I have talked about boundaries a lot on our conversations.
I was wanting to get back to this, boundaries. Actually. Well, boundaries, the thing that, like in this scenario especially, one thing that we haven't gotten to is that boundaries are less about the person. Like if I'm setting boundaries, it's less about the people that I'm thinking about might injure me or something like that, and way more about myself. And boundaries are for the people who are setting them, not for the people that they're setting them ostensibly against, in quotation marks, because it's real easy to let something slide if it's small, and then you let the next thing slide and the next thing, and eventually then you look around and you've got, you know, how did we get so many cats, you know, or whatever. It's writing them down, like you were saying earlier. It's that sort of thing is really good for reminding us and keeping it in our memory of the things that we won't put up with. And it's not, you know, that might be a bad way of saying it, but we really need to make sure that we keep our eyes on the goal here. And in order to do that, we need to make sure that we are following those boundaries and enforcing those boundaries. And choosing to enforce them is a lot harder, I think, than being on the receiving end of an enforcement often.
Agreed.
Yeah.
It takes discipline. It takes a lot of discipline. I think that I'm just throwing these things out. These are conversations John and I used to have out there on the veranda at WLAC on 1510 Nashville when we were doing the show then. It's 8 years ago?
Yeah.
This year. And we would go out now after the show. We have these long conversations about these topics, and I wish we had recorded them. I really do. I wish we'd recorded them because they were very insightful. Some of them I wish we recorded. But they were insightful, and I just enjoyed picking your brain and listening to you on these things. But I think that a lot of this is rooted in self-respect
or sometimes the lack thereof.
Yeah.
And if you don't value yourself, how in the world are you going to set valuable boundaries?
Well put. Well put. Because if
and,
you say,
and caregivers
oh,
are notorious for this.
Yeah, well, caregivers are, you know, we try to white-knuckle this stuff all the time. And, you know, we don't have, it's all up to us, like you always say, that sort of thing. And sometimes that boundary is, I've been on the clock for 3 weeks straight now. I gotta go take a walk or something like that. And that's, you know, that's a boundary. And it doesn't mean that you're not interested in helping that, you know, the your charge out or anything like that. It can feel like that. It's like, oh, I just need this little thing done. I just need this little thing done. Or, you know, or that little thing just needs to be done. Well, this big thing needs to get done, too.
We kill ourselves. Death by a thousand paper cuts.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And I think that with caregivers, we tend to feel sorry for the individual. They are suffering. They are struggling. They have a problem. And we hurl ourselves recklessly at this, and then it becomes their betterment at our expense.
Well, it's if the person we're caring for isn't happy, then why should we be? Sort of thing. And that is a rough place to be. And if,
So what I told this couple, and I said, you know, again, this guy, he doesn't need somebody to carry him. He needs somebody to basically put some boundaries for him and have help, you know, at least in this regards, he knows that this is off limits. And that gives him a sense of agency for himself to grow up and become wiser and become more responsible and a responsible functioning member of society.
Yeah.
But agency is something you and I have had this running conversation over for many years now, because I think that overbearing caregivers tend to lean so far into this that we rob this individual of agency. And I feed the horses out here in Montana, and I go out there and they're standing in the same place I fed them yesterday.
Right.
Waiting for me to feed them. But I go over to a different place. And they look at me with great perplexion with that, you know, that horse face of theirs. And I always say, why the long faces, fella? But no, I didn't say that. But it's training them, because you don't want to feed them in the same place.
No,
because
that's bad
then they
for that
just spot. Yeah, and it was bad for their poop gets all in the hay and everything else.
Yeah.
So I feed them all around the pasture in different places. And I have to train them for this.
Right.
And I think that we as people sometimes need to be trained that we don't just sit there and wait for somebody to cater to our every need, that we have agency and we will, you know, we will learn to forage for ourselves, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and this is something I would tell this couple, that some of the boundaries that you put in place need to be specifically for you. Don't get upset if. Yeah, don't make a deal if this young man is doing something that is on paper permitted and, you know, it's within his realm. If you micromanage his recovery, that is not he's the one that gets to micromanage his recovery. And you need to leave his stuff alone when it's not strictly within the bounds of what you have said is, you know, just he needs to have his own agency. And, you know, maybe make some mistakes, but
and he will. The boundaries again are not to enforce your will upon him. It's to enforce that he doesn't get to encroach upon your stuff.
Correct. Yes.
And that stuff may be your peace of mind.
Yeah.
And in fact, it often is.
Yeah.
So, all right, we got more to go. This is Peter Rosenberger. We got. I just wanted to have this conversation with John because don't you find him insightful? He's just a lot of fun, and he's got good dad jokes too. Don't go away. Hope for the Caregiver. HopeForTheCaregiver.com. We got more to go. We'll be right back.
This is John Butler, and I produce Hope for the Caregiver with Peter Rosenberger. Some of you know the remarkable story of Peter's wife, Gracie, And recently, Peter talked to Gracie about all the wonderful things that have emerged from her difficult journey. Take a listen.
Gracie, when you envisioned doing a prosthetic limb outreach, did you ever think that inmates would help you do that?
Not in a million years.
When you go to the facility run by CoreCivic and you see the faces of these inmates that are working on prosthetic limbs that you have helped collect from all over the country that you put out the plea for, and they're disassembling. You see all these legs, like what you have, your own prosthetic
and
legs.
And arms, too.
And arms. Everything. When you see all this, what does that do to you?
Makes me cry. Because I see the smiles on their faces, and I know what it is to be locked someplace where you can't get out without somebody else allowing you to get out. Of course, being in the hospital so much and so long. And so these men are so glad that they get to be doing, as one man said, something good finally with my hands.
Did you know before you became an amputee that parts of prosthetic limbs could be recycled?
No, I had no idea. You know, I thought of peg leg. I thought of wooden legs. I never thought of titanium and carbon legs and flex feet and sea legs and all that. I never thought about that.
As you watch these inmates participate in something like this, knowing that they're helping other people now walk, they're providing the means for these supplies to get over there, what does that do to you just on a heart level?
I wish I could explain to the world what I see in there. And I wish that I could be able to go and say, this guy right here, he needs to go to Africa with us. I never not feel that way. Every time, you know, you always make me have to leave. I don't want to leave them. I feel like I'm at home with them. And I feel like that we have a common bond that I would have never expected that only God could put together.
Now that you've had an experience with it, what do you think of the faith-based programs that CoreCivic offers?
I think they're just absolutely awesome. And I think every prison out there should have faith-based programs like this because the return rate of the men that are involved in this particular faith-based program and the other ones like it, but I know about this one, is just an amazingly low rate compared to those who don't have them. And I think that that says so much. That doesn't have anything to do with me. It just has something to do with God using somebody broken to help other broken people.
If people want to donate a used prosthetic limbs, whether from a loved one who passed away or, you know, somebody who outgrew them, you've donated some of your own for them to do. How do they do that? Where do they find it?
Please go to standingwithhope.com/recycle. standingwithhope.com/recycle.
Thanks, Gracie.